This is the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Hi, I'm Peter Terzakian, and welcome to the ARC Energy Idea Podcast for the week of December 14th.
And I'm Jackie Forrest, and I'm happy to introduce our guest, Martha Hall Findlay, President and CEO of Canada West Foundation, former Member of Parliament in Canada for the Liberal Party when she was in Toronto. Canada West does relevant research on policy issues that impact Canada, and they've been leading the charge on Bill 69, among other initiatives. So we're going to talk more about Canada West at the end and Martha's role, but we wanted to talk about Bill 69 because it obviously is talked a lot about in Western Canada. I think there's sometimes misinformation in terms of what it is and what it isn't. So we really wanted to thank you, Martha, for joining us and giving us an overview of what it is and where we're at with it.
Yeah, thanks very much for coming, Martha. It's a very contentious subject, this Bill C-69. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, first, it's great to be here with the both of you. Thank you for inviting me. And thank you for doing this on C-69. This bill has such potentially significant, not all negative, but very much potentially significant effects on not just the energy industry, but resources and, in fact, any major infrastructure project. And it's been running so far under the radar for most people across the country. So thank
you
for
it's getting there.
Asking.
You know, I've been going to these pro-pipeline protests, you've been seeing a lot of Bill 69 signage. So there's definitely a growing awareness within the industry. Just for context, basically the bill wants to overhaul how major projects will get reviewed in this country and given their approval, their environmental approval to move forward. Now, the goal of it was to actually build more trust. If we go back to when Justin Trudeau was voted in October of 2015, one of his pillars of his campaign was to make environmental assessments credible again and build trust. And so has it done it? Do you think that this bill is going to accomplish that?
Well, there are two aspects to trust. One is the trust that the investment community needs to invest in Canada. And again, I can't stress this enough. It's not just energy, but obviously energy is a big part of it, because part of the bill actually would replace the National Energy Board with a new watered-down energy regulator. There's nuclear issues associated with this too. But there are two aspects of trust. One is the people who felt that climate change wasn't being properly addressed, that Indigenous rights weren't being properly addressed, were converging. I know you can remember the video images of the NEB having to deal with more and more people all the time, and they were really never set up to deal with those issues. And so the issue of, well, can we trust the NEB to handle these things? And then you ended up with senior politicians, including very senior politicians, referring to the lack of trust in the process. The problem is that we also have a significant lack of trust in the investment community, the energy industry, that dates back, I would say, for the most part, to when the federal government reversed the position on the Northern Gateway pipeline. Mm-hmm. And so now we have a bill that ostensibly creates things that should add more so-called public trust in the process, but absolutely creates even less trust in the investment community.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit. So first of all, you highlighted the Northern Gateway pipeline. So that was about, if my memory serves me correctly, about 2-3 years ago.
I think that's what happened.
Not long after the Trudeau government got into
yes.
power. But let's just back up for a minute and contextualize what's going on here. So for decades, we've had the National Energy Board, the NEB, which has been effectively the regulator that regulates the construction of things like energy infrastructure projects like pipelines, but not limited to those things. Anything big.
Transmission lines.
Power lines, and so on.
And major projects like many of the big oil sands mines went under this process because they interfered with waterways that were federal jurisdiction. And so large projects like mines typically fall under it as well.
So going to the NEB website, we regulate pipelines, energy development, and trade in the Canadian public interest. Before we make a decision or recommendation, we factor in economic, environmental, social considerations. So those are the three big ones: economic, environmental, and social considerations. So this institution we call the NEB that has historically regulated the development of these projects with those three considerations is now being overhauled and superseded with Bill C-69 and whatever that brings about.
Is well, and I think it helps to specify what exactly is happening. So the NEB would be replaced by a new Canadian energy regulator that would not, in fact, be the body that would recommend or approve major projects. It's much more watered down. Replaces the Federal Environmental Assessment Act with a new Impact Assessment Act and replaces the Environmental Assessment Agency with a new Impact Assessment Agency. So just some of this is good. And some of it actually just in your description of the NEB, economic, social, as well as environmental concerns, impact assessment has actually been done de facto for, mm-hmm. for most projects. Sure. So it's not a huge expansion. The concern is one that the economic piece is completely lost. There's virtually no reference to economics, economic growth, economic impacts, competitiveness in this 392-page bill. So that's a real concern.
Okay, so there's the three again. Okay, the social aspect, environmental aspect, yeah. and economic aspect.
Yeah.
And so whereas those were three legs of the stool, what you're suggesting is that social and environment have been escalated dramatically.
Far, far more important in relative terms to anything to do with economics. So that's one of our big concerns. But also, in a good way, it brings in more involvement with Indigenous communities. There are some concerns about where that begins and ends, especially given the recent court cases. But those are aspects that we're pretty confident can actually be dealt mm-hmm. with. They might require
amendments. Well, they need to be dealt with. Right?
They need yeah. to be dealt with. But even where there are concerns in the Act, we're comfortable that they can be dealt with. There are much larger issues with the Act. One, and this goes back to the second half of that trust piece, there is an inordinate amount of discretion left with the Minister of the Environment. Major energy projects, some major mining projects, ultimately at the discretion of the Minister of not natural resources, not finance, but environment. There is a lot of concern, one, about the sheer level of political discretion, because the NEB, as it is, would actually go through all the process and then make a recommendation to cabinet. It's pretty hard, although Northern Gateway is a glaring example, but usually, mm-hmm. you know, a trusted regulator, you follow their mm-hmm. recommendations. Now it is up to the minister. It is up to the Minister of the Environment to determine, in fact, what factors to be considered when deciding whether to approve a project or not.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that's a very important difference. And I see that as an issue when I study this. You know, today we actually do have a lot of ability for politicians to affect the process. That was actually brought in by the Harper government. So the NEB would make a recommendation, but starting in 2012, Harper made it so that that decision would have to go to cabinet before it was finally approved.
Well, it always used to have to go to cabinet. The Harper change was significant because it used to be that cabinet could either say no or, you know, talk about maybe adding some conditions, et cetera, as the NEB would do. But the Harper change was that even if the recommendation was no, that cabinet could say yes. That had a lot of people very concerned. And I have to say, I at some point, you need to have some political engagement. But people were very concerned about this. The irony is that although people were upset at that, this is far more laden with political discretion than what we had before.
Right. So now the process will be that the new regulator is going to come forward with a list of pros and cons about the project, not make a recommendation, and then the Minister of Environment can decide. And because of this current construct, it would take a lot of political will to go against a regulator decision on this. But with the new system, you wouldn't have to worry about that because there wouldn't have been a decision to go for or against.
Mm. So right? traditionally, so the issue as I understand it is traditionally a regulator is removed from the political side of the decision making.
To the extent that that is possible. I mean, mm-hmm. I think most people understand that ultimately something of real significance, it's probably not inappropriate that cabinet make a decision. It's been so unusual in Canada to have cabinet overturn something the way they did in Northern Gateway. And this is where the irony is when you say we are putting forward this legislation to encourage greater trust in the regulatory process. There are a lot of issues with the specifics, but one of them is the overarching, if you want the public to trust the regulator and the regulatory process, you, the government, have to show that you have trust in the in the regulator and the regulatory process. And the way this is written, zero. It's completely, it ends up in the politician's hands. When we're talking about project approvals, the National Energy Board is also the life cycle regulator, right? It's not just a project approval. It monitors and makes recommendations and decisions on a number of factors that go into the life cycle of a project. The same is true for the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, which is also affected by this bill, by the way. That expertise, and when you are appointing people for seven-year terms like judges where and or academic professors, you appoint them, it's a seven-year term, you can't fire them, then you are having people who are full-time involved in a process who develop expertise, and because they're not fireable except under egregious circumstances, they tend to be that much more removed from political interference. That also is completely gone here. Review panel appointments are all at ministerial discretion. I mean, there's some real, you know, our hope is that the government takes all of these learnings and takes it back and says, we need something different. And we are the first to say we need something different. CEA 2012, which is the legislation that would replace this, is problematic, really problematic for the mining community in particular. But we need to, if we're going to replace bad legislation, let's replace it with really good legislation. And that's not what we have here.
Yeah, let's talk. We can talk a little bit more. I think there's some other nuances that we're worth talking about, but maybe just give us the status of the bill now. Now, I understand it's passed to the House of Commons and it is in the Senate.
It is in the Senate. It's now past second reading in the Senate. So the next step is that it will go to committee to be reviewed. Given that it's we're already in December, that probably won't start happening until January. Couple of interesting factors. This is not an easy bill. This is huge. It has all sorts of aspects to it for the Senate to consider. The Senate will only have a few months because we have an election next fall. And so when the House of Commons rises in the spring, they're going to be hoping that the Senate will have gone through it. But the Senate is also looking at C-48, the proposed tanker ban. It's looking at it. There's a lot of this country's future riding on a small number of senators, and they have a very big job ahead of them. So the timing will be interesting as well.
So there's some folks that believe that it's just going to get stalled in the Senate and not even get back to the House of Commons before an election is called. Do you think that's a likely scenario?
Truth be told, as a Canadian, I appreciate the importance of having our elected body make major decisions and have the Senate really act as sober second thought. I don't think, you know, the idea of just ragging the puck, or I think this needs to be dealt with in a really much, much more collaborative, how are we actually going to get the best thing for the country? And there are a number of senators who really feel strongly about that. There have been times when the Senate has said to the House, there are so many problems with a bill, we need to actually step back and figure out how to do it better. Or sometimes they've just voted something completely down. The Senate feels that strongly about it. Vote it down and force the government to come back with better legislation, or get the government to come to the table and say, after everything we've heard, we realize this can be improved. So let's either let it die on the order paper, and then we'll bring it back when we, and, you know, I think this current government is assuming it's going to get back into power. So in the fall, come back with legislation that is better for all of this important input that is being given.
Well, it is really important. I mean, if I think about the National Energy Board, sort of immediately post that Gateway Pipeline decision and everything that went around it, there's no question that the role of the regulator has diminished in terms of the word you used over and over again, trust, right? And regulation had fragmented and continues to be fragmented as we speak, fragmented into, you know, anybody with a Twitter account and a spreadsheet can become a rogue regulator in a community and hold things up, right? I mean, that's the social media world we live in. And we also had fragmentation where, you know, historically the NEB would be the arbiter of the decision. You get the rubber stamp and away you go. Now we have the judiciary getting involved. and lawsuits and so on, and people making judges making decisions about the future of these projects a la Trans Mountain Pipeline. And so if I think about this fragmentation, there's no question we need something to fill in the trust gap, to put a rope around this so that whatever comes out of all this, it is a truly trusted regulator that can make a decision on behalf of Canadians, and they can feel comfortable that social, environmental, and economic pursuits, virtues are preserved.
Well, one, I think that when we say that people don't trust the NEB, I think that's a stretch. I think there are a small number of people who have been concerned about the NEB and its involvement in the energy business. There are people who just, you know, have real problems with the oil and gas industry.
Sure,
anyway.
Sure.
I think the majority of people would actually say, no, to the extent we know anything about it, the NEB is one of the world's most highly regarded regulators. We know that.
Sure, but the regulatory process has been fragmented, no?
Yes, and this is where we're really concerned, particularly now that the energy industry is just reeling from price differentials and already a lack of investment enthusiasm. I mean, that's a polite way of saying not only is the investment not coming, it's going away. A senior person at LNG Canada said to me not once but twice, if we're thankful we got our approvals, because if we had to get our approvals under C-69, if we had to apply, we wouldn't even bother. I mean, that's a $40 billion investment that would not happen under this new legislation. So if anybody is saying, oh, no, you know, that's not a big deal from an investment perspective, it is a huge problem. And from our perspective, one of the biggest problems we've had in this country has been the court challenges. And just at a time when both the Northern Gateway Federal Court of Appeal decision and the TMX Federal Court of Appeal decision actually came down very much saying the NEB process passed muster. There was one little, you know, the Northern Gateway, NEB did its job. And TMX, the NEB did its job. They refused to accept complaints about cross-examination and other aspects of the process. No, they said, other than this one, you know, interpretation, the NEB process basically has had a stamp of approval from the highest courts in the land. So now to throw out the NEB and start all over again with a whole new process, our real concern is that that will take the entire industry back to square one in terms of court challenges, which if you want investment, that's the last thing. So, you know, again, this is simply not the time to throw huge uncertainty into an industry that is already reeling.
And I will comment on that because, you know, from my perspective, you'd say, well, the NEB process didn't work because the TMX and the Gateway, you know, had legal challenges. But what you're saying is, you know, in the whole context of the decision, there was just a few small problems. So in the example for the Gateway, it was because the federal government didn't do their consultation correctly.
Which is not part of the NEB, technically part of the NEB's process,
yeah, but
right?
The public sort of takes that as, oh,
exactly.
The system doesn't work.
It was this federal government that actually didn't, you know, decide to actually fulfill that obligation. In fact, I think offended a lot of Indigenous communities who stood to benefit from the Northern Gateway. They just... But the federal government said, okay, well, apparently we didn't consult enough, so we're just not going to bother.
Right. And if they had done that, by the way, they would have had a lot of learnings that could have been applied to TMX.
No question that if the federal government had taken that the court's recommendation on this is what you need to fully comply with your duty to consult and done the same thing in TMX, I would argue we wouldn't be owning a pipeline right now.
2-3 years later, along comes TMX. We have a legal challenge and we fail on two accounts, one on not having the scope large enough with not including the marine. So I guess that would have been a failure of the NEB scoping up front. And then second of all, a court challenge on the First Nations consultation, which is a similar problem that happened with Gateway. So when you look at the context of the whole approval, what you're saying is it's actually doing pretty well. It's not broken. There was just a few things around First Nations consultation and scoping.
It is absolutely not broken. And to replace something that is not broken, and I can't stress enough, the duty to consult was the federal government's job. The court even said in Northern Gateway they didn't even have an issue with marine shipping. They were very clear the NEB process was done. You, federal government, did not actually meet your extra responsibility that you should have done after the NEB had made its recommendations. TMX, there was this little bit, and some people disagree whether or not that was something that should have been within the NEB scoping, but it's hard to say that maritime shipping didn't become a big issue. So in saying that, the court even went so far as to say, but it's not going to take you long. You already did this. Just go and do this extra little bit. But otherwise, the NEB process we have now is not broken. It is what we need, and to replace it with something completely uncertain is just what the industry needs.
Yeah, so let me play devil's advocate, because I've never been one to subscribe to, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, like, we have to acknowledge, and I would say the proponents of C-69, including the federal government, and I know some of the people that have worked on it, would argue that, you know, we are in a new era. We do need to have more indigenous consultation. The environmental challenges that we face are on a global dimension with climate change, et cetera, et cetera. And so therefore, we do need to bring in something new and also bring in something holistic that reverts this fragmentation back to something more certain. In fact, I mean, the federal government would argue that we're trying to bring more certainty back into it, not uncertainty, because of this fragmentation. Now, I'm just throwing that at you and ask you the question, ultimately, like, isn't there a hybrid solution possible here? Like, take the best elements of C-69 and fold it into the NEB?
Yes, but that's not how we would do it. So I totally agree with you. I mean, I'm an environmentalist. We're all three of us are environmentalists.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we want to make sure this is done well. We care about climate change. So we totally, at the Canada West Foundation, we totally support the intentions of Bill C-69. Totally. And in fact, absolutely agree with officially broadening what is sometimes already done, but making it clear that a larger impact assessment is what's needed, because we are living in different times. People do want to make sure that other issues are officially contemplated. We totally support that. We support regional assessments. We support strategic assessments. We support all of that. There are amendments that are needed. The discretionary piece is very important. What we are recommending, just pause and fix the thing. But if it has to go, we're saying, but at the very least, don't kick the industry when it's down. Don't throw out the NEB. We have in the past advocated for improvements to the NEB. There are certain governance improvements to the NEB, absolutely. There are certain improvements to how they do hearings so that you can avoid the impression of trying to close the door, which was not intended at all, but that was ultimately what happened. There are ways to improve the NEB without question. There are ways to address some of those concerns of we're in 2018, moving into 2019. Society does expect more. Absolutely support it, but do not throw the baby out with the bathwater, because it could have really significant consequences.
Yeah, and I pulled up to prepare for this, that 2017 report about modernizing the NEB, and went through it. I mean, I think there's some things that are being addressed, but actually even some of those recommendations there didn't seem to be addressed by the new bill, C-69, in terms of, you know, having more transparency to the decision-making. It seems like there's even less today from what you've described. And it talked about the fact creating a venue where more people could get involved. I think that is part of it. So there was definitely some of those improvements that have been made, but it actually did not recommend getting rid of the NEB. It actually made recommendations about changing it.
Yeah. And as we had done also a fair bit of work on what would be needed to modernize and improve the NEB, the CER, the Canadian Energy Regulator, aspect of C-69, which we think don't do it, just keep the NEB, but there are provisions in there that we would recommend, because there are improvements in concept, take those, but do it through the NEB Act. So you're improving the NEB without, in fact, throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
So how do we overcome the polarization, you know, where we're at right now? We've got largely the industry and other industries that are affected by this to various degrees, you know, completely opposed to it, right? The ain't broke, don't fix it camp, I'll call it. And this is completely unacceptable to the federal government, who wants to push it through the Senate, et cetera, et cetera. Like, how do we find middle ground in all this going forward?
Well, I think the short answer is to have more voices that say, we get it. We understand that we need to make changes. We understand. This is why we at Canada West, we're every time we talk about this, we say, before we go any further, we support what we're trying to do here, right? We want to support the environment. We want to support a broader understanding of societal impacts and Indigenous rights, all of that. What we're saying is, don't not fix it, even though I said that about the NEB. We're not saying don't fix because we clearly have an issue. We're saying great intentions, but there's some really serious unintended consequences with this. So let's work together to actually make this better than what it is.
Wow, work together. That's a concept.
It is a concept, but, you know, Canadians have done it before. If I can just say, Peter, you know, and Jackie, we've seen this before in this country. The mining industry used to be pretty bad in terms of practices, and thoughtful people protested and said, you know, this isn't acceptable. We deserve more. And over time, the mining industry in Canada has become one of the world leaders in terms of practices. And we're not protesting them now because we understand that. The forestry industry, same. You know, the war in the woods, as much as you had extreme on both ends, the net result was our forestry practices in Canada are far better than they used to be. And they are also world leading. That's absolutely possible for the energy industry. And what I keep saying to people now is that that's what we're already seeing. We're seeing huge technological advances in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. We're seeing tremendous enthusiasm for getting water recycling to 100%. We're seeing an energy industry that, not all of them, but certainly a lot of the leaders in the industry are taking this to heart. And my hope is that by actual fact and action and what we're doing in terms of our practices, the energy industry will achieve that broader public support that we now see for mining and forestry.
It needs to get the word out. It needs to be collaborative. Everybody needs to be collaborative. So,
But we've done it before. That's my hope, right?
Yeah. And I want to recommend our listeners, and we'll put this a link to this in the show notes, an op-ed that was recently written by Martha around the recent support by the finance minister, Monod, to have a regulatory system that protects the environment but also attracts investment. So we hope that's a little crack that we can get in terms of understanding how this bill can be changed. You know, it could be that the bill still exists, but we change it in a way that it can meet in the middle, as Peter says. Just to wrap up, though, our podcast, I do want you to tell us a bit more about Canada West and your role leading it for the last few years, and how your background as a member of parliament helps you in the role that you have today.
Well, the background as a politician certainly helps you understand what happens with bills when they go through House committees and Senate committees and the goods and the not so goods of that process. So it does help us when we're actually talking about how do we affect policy. I mean, we're not a lobbyist. We don't work for anybody. Our goal is entirely evidence-based, nonpartisan, good public policy. We've supported a price on carbon for, certainly as long as I've been there. If the evidence says we want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, the evidence is a market, a mechanism is by far the most effective and cost effective. So, you know, we have people in various industries recognizing that we're not always going to be saying what anybody wants, but if the evidence says this is what we should do. So we're very proud of that. We're very proud of that objectivity and we feel credibility. We have natural resources as one of our three centers. We also have a human capital research policy center and a center on trade and investment. So when I throw on my other hat, I'm hugely involved in the NAFTA renegotiations, the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations. So we do a lot of good work. I have to say that Canada West has been around for almost 50 years. It was formed 50 years ago because of people concerned that major decisions were being taken in this country that affected the West, but they were really being made and taken in the centers of Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa. I have to say, given the sentiment right now, particularly out here, particularly in the energy industry, if there was ever a time for the Canada West Foundation's voice, it's back. And, you know, I have a microphone, so I'm going to do a plug. Canada West Foundation, cwf.ca, we're nonprofit, so always looking for people to join as members and help with this this fight for good public policy.
Good. Well, it's so great to have you here in Calgary, especially with your perspective, you know, coming from Toronto, having the background as a member of parliament, understanding how the federal system works. And I think you've done great work to educate people on this Bill C-69. And I want you to keep at it.
Yeah, very thankful for what you do. Thank you, Martha.
Well, thank you both for having me here and again for asking about C-69. Carry on the conversation.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.